Hello, and welcome to the Therapy Room Podcast. I'm Rebecca Most, and I'm a registered clinical social work intern.
My name is Ben Ernest, and I'm a registered mental health counselor intern.
And I'm Christina Myers. I'm a registered mental health counselor intern.
The Therapy Room Podcast is a podcast about learning the ins and outs of mental health, how it applies to you individually and to our society as a whole. We'll be sharing some education and experiences that we've gained on our journey as therapists, and hopefully you'll gain something from this podcast along the way. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about love languages. Love languages are something that pretty much everyone has heard of. At least I thought everyone had heard of. Yeah. but not many people realize the importance of them when it comes to improving your relationships, and not just romantic relationships either. We'll discuss the different love languages, how to become aware of them in ourselves and in our loved ones, and how to attend these love languages to improve our relationships. So grab a coffee or a Dr. Pepper if you're Christina and get comfy and welcome to the therapy room.
All right. So love languages is obviously a very important thing, not only with therapy, but especially in couples therapy, family therapy, and really in just life in general. And y'all do a lot of couples counseling, and family counseling. So how have you used the idea of the love languages in your couple sessions?
I think that using the love languages is a good way of communication, because if you don't realize one's love language or even your own love language, then it's hard to even communicate with your partner with what they want or what they need. Those type of things. Do we want to go over what the love languages are?
Why don't you tell me?
Sure. Okay. So maybe that's a good place to start. Okay. So let's see. Physical touch is one. Mm-hmm. Words of affirmation, receiving gifts, quality time, and acts of service. Those are the five love languages. They vary between different people. And it's kind of how you receive love and how the other person receives love. That's one thing they always talk about in every session with couples, family, or even individual, is what is your love language? And most people don't know. I think it's important to find out why. That way you can communicate and learn to know yourself, but also learn to know your partner better.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that the love languages are a way for us to kind of build our self-awareness of ourselves, and then awareness of others, because a lot of people don't know what their love language is. So how do you know, like, what other people can do to serve you and to make you feel loved in that moment? Mm-hmm. So the love languages were created by Gary Chapman. Through like some research, and I said earlier also that like I thought like everyone knew what the love languages are. I grew up like in a Baptist church.
Yeah.
This guy was a Baptist pastor apparently and created a whole ministry around like the love languages and wrote a book on it called The Five Love Languages. And the focus of it was that we will grow closer to those people once we identify how they want to be loved, and that the goal is that you want and desire to love that person better, and in return they love you how you want to be loved. So Gary wrote a whole book on it, and it became a huge like worldwide success. And so there's been like I think some clinical research and like people looking into it, but it also does come with some like that religious undertone, because he comes from this guy's ministry over the years.
Yeah. So, and something I didn't realize about love languages until we started looking into this, I didn't realize it was only founded in 92, which is way more recent than I thought it was going to be, which I mean, really field of therapy and social work and psychology as a whole is fairly recent as opposed to other sciences and medicine and all that kind of stuff. But 92, it's less than 30 years ago, which is crazy to think about that it was that recent. But even in those less than 30 years, it's already become such a big and important part of therapy, especially. And like both of y'all mentioned, a lot of times people don't even realize their love languages.
Right.
So how, either with clients or with just people you know, how are those relationships affected whenever they don't know either their own or their partner's love language?
Well, I think that, okay, so let's say that someone is, their love language is words of affirmation. Their partner's is different. They seek love in that way, but their partner may be showing their love language rather not than their partner's. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So like they're criticizing their partner because they're not showing me love, but they're not showing their love in their way, which I think that's a huge thing. That's a misunderstanding there, because they may be showing you love, but not the way that you receive it. And I think that once they pinpoint that, once they see that, that's like a, oh, maybe they are showing me love, but not in the way that I need to receive it and want to receive it. So once they, it's kind of eye-opening, I think, when I have clients that then realize that that's their love language and their partner realize that's their love language, that they can then kind of work on that and show their partner their love language and show love in the way that they want to receive it.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like sometimes in my couple sessions, we don't even start out talking about the love languages, but the couples will come in and sometimes feel resentment towards their partner because, like,
yeah, absolutely,
you never tell me that you love me, or you never like want to give me a hug. And so like, I'm not feeling loved and I feel like you just don't care anymore. And that's when we start talking about the love languages, because maybe one partner's is physical touch, where they want to be like hold hands, like, you know, just have you come like touch their shoulder when you walk by. Like it can be the simplest things. Doesn't even have to be sexual, but their thing's physical touch. And then their partner's could be words of affirmation, and they're just displaying those different love languages and they're not connecting. And so then they build resentment, thinking the other doesn't love them as much.
Yeah, I can agree with that for sure.
Yeah, and obviously the cliche is communication is key with relationships, and love languages come into play with that a lot. Because Christina, like you said, you can't communicate very well if you don't know how that person needs to feel loved. And you can't feel satisfied in giving love if that person doesn't receive it the way that you're giving it either, necessarily. So something that I work with, either my couples that I work with or with individuals who are having problems with their relationships, is yes, communication is key, but also being honest with what you need and what you want, and really being able to speak up about your emotions and your needs, because a lot of times people don't necessarily do that as much as we would think, just because it's like, oh, I don't want to feel like a bother to them, or I don't want to feel like I'm nagging or anything like that. But if your partner, spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, you don't feel like you are feeling loved by them, but you haven't told them,
they may not even realize it.
Exactly. Like if you don't tell them how you best feel loved and they don't know, nothing's going to go right with that.
Right, nothing's going to change.
Yeah, not as right as it could. So it's really just opening up the door for communication, which communication opens up the door for a whole lot of improvement in really every aspect, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. We're like, yeah. We
agree. So I think with that, too, like that makes me think about how another aspect of the love languages is that the goal is that it creates like more empathy in those relationships. Mm-hmm. So the more open the communication is, the more you're able to like have empathy for your partner or your friend, whatever relationship that is. And that's what like builds it back up. That's what builds those relationships up to where you want them to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you guys want to like kind of break down like what the love languages are and like describe? Because some people may not know
what absolutely
all like receiving gifts is or words of affirmation.
So with physical touch, Becca, you mentioned that it's not always like intimacy physical touch. It can be as simple as just putting your hand on another person's leg or something like that.
Yeah.
Where a lot of times with certain people, it's like, oh, I haven't felt close with them lately. And whether that be physically or emotionally, whatever, a lot of times that means doing something as simple as just like putting your hand on her leg in the car, something like that, like while you're driving, something simple.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where if somebody needs that physical touch just to feel close to somebody, then it's not always the intimacy. A lot of times it is just the little handholds, like touches, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say are like the, like you recommend if someone's partner's love language is physical touch, like what would you do to make them feel loved and what would you not do?
So maybe like even asking them, what specifically would you like from that? Like, mm-hmm. do you want more intimacy? Do you want more handhold hugs? I think it's open, just having open communication is important, but maybe giving them hugs out of the blue without them initiating it, or kind of like get onto the clues of, do they like holding your hand in the car? I think those little things, like putting your hand on their leg, those type of mm-hmm. things for physical touch. Some things mm-hmm. not to do is maybe go long periods without, you know, having that intimacy or touching them or making them feel loved in that way. Waiting for them to have that desire, waiting for them to hold your yep. hand or hug you, like you initiate those things. I think that's a good place to start with physical touch for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing that I've really noticed lately, not necessarily noticed lately, but something that I've picked up on with my wife, whenever we are in our office doing, she's working on homework, I'm working on notes, whatever, is I always, whenever I leave the room to go do whatever I do, whenever I leave the room, whenever I get up to leave the room, I'll always like put my hand on her shoulder and then kiss her on the top of the head. And then yeah. I leave, because that's something that's important to her, because mm-hmm. we've had those conversations before and we keep on mentioning, but communication is really important with not only figuring out the love languages,
right.
but also making sure that you're doing the right ones, the right way, and defining the right amount of times.
It. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's so important.
Right. And something that I work with my clients a lot is I have them always do two things whenever either it's seeing couples or whenever it's someone going through troubles with their relationship, is I have them do two things. Is I have them have a sit down conversation with their partner and have them say three good things about their partner, mm-hmm. either things that they appreciate, things that they love about them, whatever love means for you in that moment. But then also have them have my client ask their partner, is there anything that I can be doing to better our relationship? And a lot of times that does open up the door for talking about love languages, because yeah. it's like, oh, you don't hold my hand as much as you used to, and I miss that and I want that. And mm-hmm. it opens up the door for that conversation. So starting out with the three good things, which kind of butters them up a little bit whenever you ask for help, but it's also good to just have those words too, because a lot of people do have those words of affirmation, love language too. I'm not sure if there's been studies on like the frequency of love languages, like this percent of the population has whatever, but I know with working with clients, I would say words of affirmation is extremely common. Mm-hmm. So what do words of affirmations look like?
I would say words of affirmation look like just the other person giving you compliments or recognizing like, wow, you're doing such a good job, showing appreciation for you in that way. It doesn't even have to be verbal. I feel like it could be like someone writes you a letter and that's words of affirmation for you. Like you feel loved because yeah. you're reading those words.
Yeah.
And reading like this person recognizes like these attributes in me and they appreciate me for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like thanking them, showing appreciation, complimenting them. Mm-hmm. I think those are some good things to do. I like the writing notes. That's actually what my husband and I do. We started like 2 weeks ago that we write a love note like each day.
Oh, wow.
And it can be just short and sweet, or it can be long. It doesn't matter how long it is. I think it's just taking the time to like write down thank you, or I appreciate you for this, or complimenting you there. I think it just shows, you know, that the other person loves you. Mm-hmm. And that's my love language, is words of affirmation. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge thing to me when he came to me and said, hey, let's do this. Because I think that's a cool thing to do, just to show your appreciation for others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's something like I will tell clients, is if words of affirmation is not your like love language, like yeah. your gift, like maybe like you really struggle with communicating, then write it down to mm-hmm. give it to that person that does receive love language. receive words of affirmation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because maybe like you all have an easier time putting it on paper than just saying it. Mm-hmm. And it's still coming across.
Right. So I had a couple I've been working with that one of their love languages is words of affirmation. And they've been coming and all these things. And each week they say good things that they've been trying to do with the love languages, maybe some not faults or failures, but like some things that they can improve on. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's why I think it's really important when you have to define words of affirmation, mm-hmm. because she was saying, thank you for this, thank you for that. But he didn't want to hear that. He wanted to hear, I'm proud of you. You mean the world to me, like all those things. And she didn't know that that's what he needed. Mm-hmm. So now that she knows that, she's taking the bit of information and using that because she was just doing it in the wrong way.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. It was not what he was needing to hear.
Right.
But she thought it was. She was like, well, right. I am telling you thank you and stuff.
Right. Like she thought she was doing a good job and he said she was, right? He's like, you are telling me thank you. I acknowledge that. I really appreciate that. But I would need to hear it this, mm-hmm. in this way. And it's not right or wrong. It's just he needs to hear these things and that's important to him. And now that she knows that, I think that's as communication as well, is letting the person know that, you know, I think really defining that is really important too. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think with the notes that y'all do, that becomes especially important whenever kids come into the mix too.
Right.
Because once kids come in, then everything changes. And having those little notes, it's being intentional with your time. Absolutely. And also whenever kids come to the mix, both of you are kind of all over the place. And sometimes you need to hear like, hey, I'm proud of you. You're a good mom. You're a good dad.
Yeah.
You're a good parent. And a lot of times that can start to slip away. And, but it's one of the most important things that you can do to keep up with the family. And that kind of ties back in our last episode about the mental load. So if you haven't listened to that one, go listen to that one. But another aspect of really parenthood and love languages is quality time. So quality time, not only with your partner, but also with the kids too, because now love languages, it's not just about their, marriage, or spouse relationship. It's about the relationship with the kids too, but still with wanting to increase quality time with your partner too. So, and quality time means, can mean different things to different people. So something that I've kind of come across lately is something called body doubling. Do you know, have you all heard of body doubling before?
No.
No? Okay. So it's
lightness.
It's really not a big topic, but it's something very common with people with ADHD, where if you are having things that you need to do and you aren't feeling motivated to do it, sometimes just having somebody in the room with you while you're doing something, you're more likely to complete the task that you're doing. That can also be tied in with quality time too, where I know with, not necessarily with every, but with a lot of guys, we like alone time, but I like alone time with you.
Right.
Where it's, you want to be alone, not really doing anything, but you don't want to be by yourself. So there's a difference between being alone and being by yourself. Mm-hmm. And again, with communication about quality time, then that's something that you can talk about and be like, hey, I don't really want to do anything, but I still want to be with you. And that, again, quality time is different for different people. So how else can quality time play out with people?
Yeah. When I think of quality time too, I think of that, but I also think of like uninterrupted time, like put the cell phones away type of thing. Like, like laying in bed, watching TV is fine until you're on your phone doing different things. And, you know, quality time, it can be like you said, like just spending alone time together, but doing your own thing, or also like spending alone time, just talking with each other, like uninterrupted without phones or other things that it's on your mind. And I think that's what I think of when I think of quality time.
Yeah. And I think it too, I mean, it also can mean like being intentional and being like, oh, you're going to the store. Well, I'll go with you.
Right.
Or, you know, like, hey, like I booked us a babysitter and we are going to have a date night. Mm-hmm. And so that uninterrupted time, but sometimes making it like more intentional and setting like a planned date.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah. And you saying, as soon as we started talking about this, I was like, oh, I want to talk about being intentional with it too. And you brought it up. So being, there's a huge difference between having time together and having intentional quality time, because you can go out to eat with your partner because you have to eat. Mm-hmm. But if you make it an intentional thing, like we're going to go out to this specific restaurant, whether it be nice or just one that y'all like, or if you're just going to McDonald's and you're just saying, we're going to go out to eat and we're going to do it together. And it's being intentional about that quality time that we're spending together. And a lot of kind of being intentional also comes with acts of service too, because yes, you clean the house because it has to get done. But if you're being intentional about it and be like, I know that my partner really appreciates coming home to a clean house, so I'm going to do that for them because I know that it's something they appreciate. But acts of service isn't just putting up the laundry or cleaning the house. What else does acts of service look like?
I mean, I would say, well, yes, like it's chores at home, but also like if you notice like that person is too tired, then you'll take up whatever responsibility they had and do it. Or just doing things that like they wouldn't expect like of you in that moment. It makes me think about the Mental Load podcast and how we have like these checklists in our head, but acts of service, like you're intentionally like, I'm going to do this because it is something that they usually do, but I'm going to do it without them even having to ask to show that I love them.
Right. I think that, but like also saying, if you're saying, yeah, I'll do that or I'll do it later, rather, like, let's say that someone asked their partner to do something now, can you take out the trash? Whatever. I think doing it in that moment and doing it when they want or not when they're asking for it, I think is really important too. I think just doing it ahead of time and being intentional with it too. You know, showing them rather than telling them you're going to do something.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I feel like we have like these do's and don'ts with the love languages, like don't do this if their love language is acts of service. Like you don't want to say, I'm going to do this for you and then not do it because they're going to feel rejected in that moment.
Right.
And another thing that I think about with acts of service is, Becca, kind of like you mentioned, is there's some days where we know that our partners, they were just spent from the day, whatever it is, whether it be work or kids, whatever it is, they aren't really feeling as good as they can be. So we want to do like a job that they would normally do around the house, something like that. And something that I work with clients and couples especially is something that whenever my wife and I were getting ready to get married, and we did pre-marriage counseling and all this kind of stuff, the guy that we did it with, he said, marriage isn't 50-50, it's 100-100. And it's whenever one of you is having a 75 day and the other one's able to pick up that 25, then it's 75-125, because it's always all of you giving all of your effort. But there's days where we can't do that. But that's where our spouse, as long as they're emotionally and mentally in a place where they can pick up those extra 25.
Yeah, that makes me think, I wish like I had it with me right now, but there's a Brené Brown like a video clip where she talks about like some days like you're both at 25%, you're not at like 50-50 or 100, but you recognize that, where that self-awareness comes in. You communicate, hey, like this is all I can do today, and hopefully like also you would recognize your partner, you're really struggling with this, so like I'll take the kids and I'm gonna like take them, we're just gonna go grab food and come back or something.
Yeah, and it's again opening up the door for communication, where it's saying, I'm not able to give all that I can today. I'm just not in the right headspace for it, whatever the reasoning might be, but at least telling your partner that. And then if they're in a spot where they can either be receptive of that or recognize it before you even have to say it, and they really kind of just pick up the slack from that. And kind of another video that I saw the other day, it was this, just some random video on Instagram, but it was a family, mom, dad, and I think either four or five kids. Three kids are like, let's say 10 to two. And then the mom just had a baby like 2 weeks before. So mom and dad were doing dishes, all this kind of stuff. The kids were running around screaming, and the toddler was tugging on mom to try to get her to pick him up. And before she could do that, dad saw that, recognized like she just had a baby, she's exhausted, and then she's doing all this too. So dad grabbed the toddler, started doing stuff with him and walked him around. His dad was able to recognize that with his mom. And being able to like I said, not if you're able to receive whatever the partner is letting you know, be like, hey, I'm not in that space today, or being proactive with it and being able to recognize that. Because again, after communicating in a healthy way and knowing your partner's needs and their love languages and kind of where they're at right now in that moment, then you're able to pick up the slack without them even having to ask. And being ahead of the game is always a good thing too.
We haven't talked about gifts, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So another love language is receiving gifts. And what does that look like for you guys?
So gifts is, it's in a way kind of, it's similar to acts of service, kind of. Because whether it be doing something for somebody else, that could be a gift in a way. Mm-hmm. But it could also be cleaning the house and then getting flowers, whatever it is. And it doesn't have to be this big, extravagant piece of jewelry or clothes or whatever. It could just be, oh, I saw this.
And thought of you.
Yeah. Like I saw this bag of chips and I figured you would like
them. Yeah.
And for me, I feel like gifts isn't necessarily more common, but in my own personal life, I've seen it more as the expressive love language, more so than the receptive. And I've kind of found that interesting, where like, I know for me, I love giving people stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I saw this, thought of you, take it. Yeah. And it's an interesting one because there are receptive and expressive love languages. But we'll talk about that after we're done with gifts. So what else can gifts look like?
Like what you were saying is good, but I also think like being intentional with the gift giving, it can be like little souvenirs. If you go on a trip, mm-hmm. and you think of, oh, they would like that, or bring something back to them just to show that you miss them, whatever. I think, like you said, I feel like gift giving is not as common. Mm-hmm. I actually haven't worked with a couple that is their love language, which is kind of funny. But I also agree that I also like giving gifts, but I wouldn't say that's my love language. It is kind of weird to think about it that. Like souvenirs, like little, like, if Keegan brings me home a Dr. Pepper, I'm like, oh my gosh, I love you. Like, thank you. Like, yeah. You thought of me and got me that type of thing. I think just like even little things of being being intentional about it is what it's all about, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Expressive and receptive love languages. Just because you receive a certain love language, so like if your love language is words of affirmation, you like being told that people are proud of you, thank you, all those kind of things. That doesn't mean that you also give those to people, because a lot of times love languages are different for expressive and receptive. So how can people kind of be aware of that? And how can that be something that people kind of start to pick up on within themselves?
Well, there's definitely one obvious answer is that there's love languages quizzes that you can do.
Yes.
Where you can see like, okay, this is what I receive and this is what I give out to people. But also for yourself, like, ask yourself, like, when do I feel like the most loved and appreciated? Like, is it when they tell me something, or is it when I get that Dr. Pepper, or is it when we go and are just spending time together? Mm-hmm. And when do you feel the happiest, like, giving back to people? Like, is it when you give them a gift?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it could help, like, if you even, like, sit and reflect and write it down, maybe, or talk to, like, people that know you really well, like, what do you recognize, like, I do for you a lot, and see, like, how they respond to it.
What I like to tell my couples is that, or individuals, doesn't have to be just couples, like, when you're sad, like, when you're really down, like, what would bring you the most joy? Giving, like, someone giving you something, someone telling you that they're proud of you, like, going through the each love languages, like, which one would be most uplifting to you? Like, that may be your love language. If they're not sure, like, in the moment, like, you're not, we may not be taking the quiz during the actual session,
right.
But I like to like kind of give out that question, because then that kind of lets them reflect and be like, okay, what does give me the most joy? What would uplift me the most? And then that thing kind of reflects on it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of going back to gift giving with expressive gift giving, another thing to keep in mind is if you really love giving gifts, sometimes you give gifts to people like, oh, this is something that I like for them, not necessarily that they like for them. And that's something that's, you gift givers get very, very gung-ho and excited about giving gifts for people, but if they wouldn't necessarily like it, then why get it for them at all? And it's, you have to kind of put yourself in their shoes a little bit with what's a gift that they would like for them, not what's a gift that I would like for them. Not necessarily that's always wrong, but if those are the only gifts that you ever get them, it's like, I like this for you, not you like this for you. Then it's kind of just something to keep in mind with how you do give your gifts. And like we talked about earlier with giving your words, you have to have that open communication with your partner. Be like, I notice and appreciate that you're thanking me for all these things, but really I need you to tell me that you're proud of me for being XYZ. And again, all comes down to communication. Yep. We can do a whole podcast episode on communication. So we might.
We could all be on that one.
Yeah. So, and Christina, you brought something up that I have gotten a lot of anecdotal evidence on lately. Stories and just through the grapevine, things like that. So you said that whenever a client is feeling down, what is something that would make you feel loved and happy right now through one of the love languages? Something that I heard a while ago, I don't remember where I heard it from, and I think I talked to you all about this a couple of weeks ago, but whenever I have a client or even just someone that I know personally, you can tell that they're starting to go into a depression whenever they start doing the opposite of whatever their love language is. So again, I don't think there's actual scientific studies on this. I haven't found any, but to me, there's enough anecdotal evidence for it to mean something. So if you start going into depression or just a not good mental state, then you do the opposite of your love language. So if your love language is physical touch or quality time, you're more likely to isolate. If your love language is words of affirmation, you're more likely to engage in negative self-talk. If it's acts of service or gifts, there's a lack of self-care or seeking out the things that you love and make you happy. So really, if nothing else, once you are aware of your love language and you can be aware of whenever you're starting to make yourself go without that love language, that's probably time for a good check-in, either just with yourself, with your trusted person, with a therapist, whatever it is, but being aware of everything and not aware of everything that's going on with you can be extremely important. And noticing that whenever those love languages are starting to slip away, it's time for you to check in with somebody.
I really like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really like that.
Again, no idea where I got it from, but I remember hearing it and I've kind of took it and ran with it. So
yeah.
I want to do like actual studies on it. So
I'd be interested in that.
Yeah. So love languages are obviously with like romantic partners and things like that, but it's not only with them too. There have been a lot of basically a big push for love languages in the workplace too, which is kind of interesting. So there's some jobs where they do personality quizzes and stuff like that whenever you get hired on, but there's some that have started doing love languages tests too. Mm-hmm. So how can the love languages be applicable in other places than just with romantic partners?
Yeah, I mean, I think the workplace is like a really great example because especially like with your coworkers, you want to work together as a team, and you like telling someone, oh, you're doing such a good job, that might mean the world to them, or that might mean absolutely nothing because they feel like, well, no one like comes and asks me questions or asks like for my advice, like you're telling me you're doing a good job, but I don't feel that way.
Yeah.
Because maybe they have a different love language. So I think in the workplace, it's really like a good tool to use to boost each other up. And especially like with like a supervisor and like a, what's the word?
Manager.
Yeah. Like with your, I keep thinking clients because we don't supervise anyone now.
Employees.
Employees. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's a huge thing. Like you want your employees to feel cared about, and especially like also with like providing feedback, and that helps with those relationships.
Yeah. And I think really, like I said, with personality quizzes and stuff, that's relatively common in some jobs. Love language is not so much. So making sure that either as an employer or a supervisor, you're kind of hitting on all the love languages, because if you aren't being intentional with asking your employees, like, hey, how do you feel most appreciated in your job? Then you can't leave some out. Because I know with previous jobs, you can, like, there's only so many times I can be given another box of pens or a pizza party.
Yeah.
And like, who cares at this point? I have right. 17 boxes of pens that I'm never going to use because I hate these kind of pens. but you have to hit on all the boxes, and you have to make sure that you are, as a supervisor, you are treating your employees with how they feel appreciated, and that you have to make sure that you're doing all of those, because if you're leaving out one, then you're leaving out a huge portion of your employees too, and that's just something to keep in mind.
Do we want to dive into other like relationships?
We talked about kids a little bit. We could talk a little bit more about that. So Christina, as a current mom, Becca as a soon-to-be mom, how with your little lovely ball of joy, how is that?
What did you call
it? A little lovely ball of joy.
Oh, I'm gonna hear what you said.
So how is, I don't have kids. I'm not gonna have kids for a long time, hopefully. Is he to like an age or a point yet where he, you can tell that he has a certain love language at all? Like, I don't know how that works.
That's hard. You know, I actually haven't thought about that. I think I think of the love languages when I'm hanging out with Hudson. That's his name. He just turned one, so I think it's hard. But, like, I know that he's aware of things because he recognizes things. And when I am spending time with him, let's say I am playing with him in his ball pit or whatever doing, I make sure that I put my phone away. Yeah. Like, I want to have that quality time with my son. And even though he's only one, he just turned one, so there's a difference between one and almost two.
Yeah.
But he may not recognize that, but I feel like I'm going to know that I had that quality time with him. And I can tell that he does like physical touch because he wants to lay on me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those type of things. I think once he gets older, that's something that I'm really going to like look into.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually haven't thought about that since you just said that.
Yeah. Well, my husband and I actually had a conversation recently about like our childhoods growing up and our love languages. Because I also feel like love languages can change over time.
Oh, yeah.
But it got me thinking, because as parents, sometimes we may go like overboard with like our love language with the kids. It's like maybe words of affirmation. You love to give that out. And you're always telling your kid like, I'm so proud of you. You're doing great. And for that child, like I want y'all can like add to this too, but it might come off as disingenuous at one point, cause like someone's always told me this stuff, or like people are always giving me hugs and I'm tired of getting hugs. Yeah. And so I'm curious if there's research behind like our childhoods and the love languages that we've received from others, how it kind of teaches us and grows us to have our own love languages.
Yeah, or maybe what we didn't receive as a child, that's what we need the most.
Yeah. That's kind of where I would lean towards with that, where it's more so what you were lacking as a child and what you need now. Most. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you had a absent parent and you didn't really get told good job, or hey, I'm proud of you, I love you, then odds are with the clients that I've worked with, that's what they need the most. Or if it is kind of the overbearing parent where they're always around, they always, whether it be too much quality time or too much, like hugging and all this kind of stuff, odds are people stray away from that. Not necessarily, because there's, like my wife's family, they always hug, say, I love you whenever they leave all the time. And it's now a running joke between me and my sister where I always I always yell, hey, I love you whenever we leave. And she just waves at me and walks away. But different families and different people kind of have different ways of showing it too. But like we said, I feel like odds are it's more so what you were lacking as a child is what you need now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that definitely got me thinking, like, just self-awareness as parents and
right.
like, are we giving them a little bit of everything? Like, mm-hmm. what are we doing with our love languages with our kids?
Yeah. Yeah. And I really think hitting all of them and kind of seeing where they fit in as they yeah, grow up into themselves mm-hmm. is they kind of decide what they need and from whom they need it. Mm-hmm. Really just depending on what they got, what they like, things like that. But a lot of it yeah. is developing them as independent and as strong as they can be with all the love languages and then them figuring that out as they go throughout their life.
Even being like self-aware, like, am I lacking in this area? Am I putting too much in this area? Mm-hmm. Even if, you know, them being really young, I think it's important to kind of be hitting all the spots, like Ben said, to let them grow into their own person and them kind of decide what their love language should be. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important.
Yeah. And Becca, you said it and I 100% agree. Love language has definitely changed throughout mm-hmm. your lifetime. There's all the psychology stuff about at a certain point, your personality and your behavior is kind mm-hmm. of set in stone, which to a certain extent, yeah. But with love language, it's kind of the same way because kids, they may have different ones from whenever they're teenagers and then whenever they're young adults and then middle and later adulthood, it changes a lot. And we mentioned it at the beginning, but if you don't know your love language, literally just Google love language quiz and you can figure it out.
Make sure to type in free.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you go through the whole quiz, then you get to the end and wants you to pay for it.
Yeah.
No. Waste of time.
Yeah. Or go see a therapist and they can work through it with you.
So come see us at the therapy room.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but really all of this is for naught if you don't know your love language. So, and don't know your partner's love language.
Yeah.
So again, communication with your partner, with your family, with your kids, and also doing a lot of introspective reasoning too. So love language is a very, very big topic with a lot of details, things like that. But it's one of the most important things with not only realizing who you are and what your needs are, but then also realizing who your partner is and what their needs are. Yeah. So kind of in starting to wrap up for today, we always end every episode with a quote, and today's quote was chosen by Christina.
Alrighty. So the quote that I chose was, love can be expressed and received in all five love languages. However, if you don't speak a person's primary love language, that person may not feel loved, even though you are speaking the other four. Once you are speaking his or her primary love language fluently, then you can sprinkle in the other four and they will be like the icing on the cake. And that was from Gary Chapman, who did write the Five Love Languages book. I think it's important for us to hit on the person's love mm-hmm. language, but I don't think you should lack in the other areas yeah. as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if you're working out and you only work out your right arm, you're going to be the funky looking right. person. But yeah. if you... With love languages, too, you got to make sure that you're doing their main one.
And then, yeah.
like you said, all the other ones are just a little bit extra. Where it's like, yeah. oh, that's nice.
Right. Yeah. So that wraps up this episode of the Therapy Room podcast. Please let us know what topic you'd like for us to do on an episode next. You can do that by leaving a comment on our social media or YouTube, responding to the Q&A on Spotify, or by emailing us at podcast@thetherapyroomflorida.com. You can watch the podcast on all services such as Spotify, YouTube, or listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on social media to get sneak peeks to our upcoming episodes and to see all the happenings in the therapy room. We also recently opened the therapy room store. You can get shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, and all profits will be going towards providing pro bono services to individuals who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford mental health care. Thank you for watching, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time at the therapy room. Thank you.